Because we have a really special show in store for you tonight with one of our veteran guests, Neil Slade. It's been quite a while, so I'm so happy to have him back. He is the author of 8 books, most of which on brain and behavior, including Tickle Your Amygdala, The Frontal Lobe Supercharge, and Secret of the Dormant Brain Lab. He is also a lifelong musical composer, seasoned concert performer, and teacher, and is well known across the globe for his appearances, speaking on the potential of the human brain and accessing normal and so-called paranormal abilities. His website is absolutely amazing, neilslade.com. You could literally spend months there, lots of little games and videos and things to just kind of test yourself. And anyways, we're going to be talking about your amazing brain here tonight. Welcome to the show, Neil. Thanks so much for being here tonight.
Christy, thank you very much for having me back on again. I am looking forward to our talk.
Definitely, definitely. You, you know, in the past, we talked about tickling your amygdala and even some cloud busting in there. And but it's really funny because when I heard from you, I had just I don't really want to say taught, but introduced that to new people that had never thought about it. And, you know, of course they want to look at you like you're crazy until they find out how easy it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, there's always those that, you know, I think I posted a picture or something about it on Facebook, and they're like, oh, yeah, right, like, you can cloud bust, you know, just like I can travel to the moon, and, maybe that's true, too.
that sort of gained a lot of notoriety about 10 years ago when I had made an appearance on Art Bell, and it came about in concert with some drought, which we're facing, as it turns out, right now in this country. But back then, and I guess this was 1997, they were having very serious drought in the state of Florida, and they had a number of very serious wildfires, specifically in around Daytona County, which was the northeast corner of Florida. And so I called Art, and I said, well, let's try an experiment. You know, I'll explain to people what cloud busting is, that very simple kind of game. It's really, you know, a game. I said, but then maybe we can all combine our brain focus energy and do a little rainmaking. So I went on the air and I explained this cloud busting, little fun exercise. And people can read about that if they go to there are links in a table of contents on my site, but they can go to neilslade.com/cloud.html if you want to know about cloud busting. And basically what you do is you tickle this little spot in your brain so you get in the right frame of mind, and you focus your intention on a cumulus cloud. And ideally you pick one that's in one cloud among many others, because clouds come and go, as we all know. You know, I mean, if you don't do anything, a cloud will disappear on its own. But if you could pick a cloud that is surrounded by other clouds and concentrate on it, the idea is your mental focus and whatever untapped energies we have in the brain, you know, the question is, could we vaporize, could we make a cloud disappear? And I thought it was a crazy idea for a long mm-hmm. time. And I tried it, and I had learned to do this about 20 years ago. And the idea came back to me after I started doing some radio appearances and started talking about brain potential. And I found I could do it very easily. And I videotaped a couple examples just right in my backyard. No practice needed. I just faced the camera to the cloud, focused, and it took about 3 minutes, and poof, it was gone. And the other clouds around it remained. So we did this on that radio show. And then I said to everyone, I said, listen, here is an area of the country that desperately needs rain. The fire services said we need 10 inches of rain. If rain is going to put out the fires in our area, it would take 10 inches. And no rain was really forecasted. Oh, let me shut off my email so we don't hear those little ding-dongs mm-hmm. here. And no rain was forecast in that area. So I said, let's just try it anyway. So there were probably a million people listening to that radio show that night. And even while the show was still going, within a couple hours, we were monitoring the satellite photos of Florida, we could see clouds starting to appear near this northeast corner of Florida. And sure enough, within 3 days, it began raining, and it didn't stop until 9 or 10 inches of rain. And if people people can, and I wrote about this in the Tickle Your Amygdala book, and there are links to, I think there's probably some links that you can find online or on my webpage that actually point to the weather records. And it was like, it was completely unexpected. The rain was completely unexpected. It was far beyond what the normal range was. And so I can say, well, this very well may have well illustrated the potential of the human brain.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it kind of makes sense. I mean, with a little background in cloud busting, if we can make them go away, we probably have at least a little bit of influence in bringing them in. I mean, you know, think of the natives and the Hopis and such out in the desert growing corn for survival, where, you know, literally months with no rain, there was something that had to be done.
Right. It's not a foreign, it may be a foreign idea to our modern civilized society, but certainly not in the history of mankind. Yeah. One of the things that I touch upon in this new book quite a bit is people who have really honed their abilities to manipulate physical reality with the power of their mind. The book that I just wrote, I don't want this to sound like a commercial for the book, but let me explain a little bit where I'm going with this. The Tickle Your Amygdala book, I started a year ago, and I wanted to talk to a lot of different people around the globe in all different professions and careers and activities. And I wanted to show that people universally are using their amygdala, this little button in their brain, to guide them in their behavior and guide them towards things, you know, towards what is good for you, as opposed to, you know, being drawn towards things that are bad for you. The amygdala being a compass that you can rely on. And so I talked to a great number of people. One person in particular was very interesting, and this was Dr. Lawrence Blair. And are you familiar with his work at all?
I'm not. It doesn't sound familiar right now.
He and his brother traveled, and he still lives in Bali now. They traveled around Indonesia, and they met with many shamans and medicine men and so on. And there was one particular fellow that he associated with for a number of years named John Chang. And John Chang really had control of his brain. And one of the ways that he would manifest this natural brain power would blow your socks off. He could create electricity with his bare hands that they could measure with a voltmeter, and which he could hold a LED light bulb in his fingers and light up the bulb. He could set a crumpled piece of newspaper on fire merely by holding his hand above that crumpled up newspaper. And he would do this in, you know, they would make him strip down to his underwear, and then they would pass a metal detector over his body to prove that he didn't have, you know, generators buried his skin. And so he was able to access these powers through the power of the brain and mind. And so that was a very interesting case showing brain power. And there are many other cases that I illustrate in that book as well. But the potential of the brain truly is infinite, and most importantly, it's available to everyone.
Absolutely. It's just amazing. You know, we call these things paranormal abilities, but that really is, I mean, they're naturally normal, innate within us. So it just takes people like you getting out on the front lines and, you know, kind of introducing this idea to people. Neil, let's, you know, since we brought up the amygdala, tickling your amygdala, what is the function of the amygdala? Where is it located in our brain?
Well, I've been writing about the amygdala for 30 years, so I've really worked very hard to define what it is. And there are some very complicated explanations out there. A fellow named Joseph Ledoux is one of the foremost researchers in the amygdala, and he's got it down to about 3 minutes. So if you can go on to YouTube, he'll explain the amygdala in 3 minutes. But I've done him about 2 minutes and 58 seconds better than that. I can tell you in about 3 seconds, the amygdala is your brain's compass. That's basically what it is. It is a part of the brain that rewards you, that gives you positive feedback when you are going in the direction of survival and basically doing things that are good for you. You are rewarded by this little button. And contrary, just like a compass needle can spin in 180 degrees, it can tell you when you're going in exactly the wrong direction, when you are involved in behaviors or thinking that is anti-survival. And the way the amygdala tells you whether you're going the right way or the wrong way is through emotions.
So if
you're going the right way, your amygdala gives you a positive emotion. If you're going in a direction that is contrary to your well-being, it gives you negative emotions. And everyone can you know, naturally understand that. I'll give you a couple of examples. My favorite one is one of the amygdala tickling exercises in the book called The Nose Knows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can understand how your amygdala works. Now, the amygdala is actually your olfactory nerves. Your sense of smell is really an extension of the amygdala.
Yeah.
The sense of smell allows you to sense something that is extended beyond your fingertips. So you can smell danger, or you can smell something good that you can't even see that's around the bend. Do you understand that? It's
definitely
kind of like, it's like a radar. It's like brain radar that allows you to sense reward or punishment, you know, that your eyes can't see or that your fingers can't touch. So in that way, that's the amygdala is connected to that sense of smell. So what you can do is, you know, at home, find something that smells bad, that you find is pleasurable. I mean, you know, stick your nose in the toilet, for example.
or do an experiment, or pull out one of those experiments in your refrigerator.
It'll smell bad, right?
Yeah.
Your amygdala is giving you a negative emotion. It's giving you a negative sensory input saying, yuck. It's saying, don't go this way. Don't eat this moldy bit of cheese, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't eat this rotten bit of hamburger. You're getting, you smell it, and so the olfactory nerves, which are connected directly to the amygdala clicks into action, and it that bad-smelling thing bites your amygdala. I like to say an amygdala bite. Something something that elicits a negative amygdala reaction is called an amygdala bite, okay? So
okay.
You smell that, oh, you know you shouldn't eat that. It's bad for you, okay? You shouldn't drink water that smells like Clorox. You can smell it. It's immediate. You don't even have to think about it. It's so fast, it's instantaneous, and the amygdala works instantaneously. Okay, so that's an amygdala bite. That's the amygdala clicking backwards. It says, don't go sway. See, it's the compass pointing south, and you're trying to go to the North Pole, right? All right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is an amygdala tickle, which is just the opposite. The amygdala gives you a positive emotion, a positive sensation. So after you're done smelling the toilet bowl, go into the kitchen and make yourself a fresh bowl of popcorn and smell that. And it's like, it says, you know, eat me. This is for you, right? Or make some toast, right? Or, you know, or smell a rose. And it's saying, go this way. That positive reinforcement is your amygdala telling you, this is the way you should go, and nature wants you to go this way, so we're going to reward you with positive emotion. And basically, that's how the amygdala works. It's a compass. It tells you if you're going if you're going the right way or if you're going the wrong way. It's that simple.
Okay, so I guess that explains why essential oils are so pleasing. And, you know, even as you were just talking about popcorn versus the toilet bowl, I could actually feel the senses, you know, just with you talking about it. And it is kind of a little buzz or a tickle in your brain that you can kind of feel when you smell something really, really pleasant. And, you know, the opposition we feel when we're exposed to something that's less than pleasant. Now, in regards to the amygdala, I'm assuming that each one has a little bit different perception based on, you know, people's pheromones. Some people are attracted to other smells and odors, where others are not so much. But it's that time, Neil, so let's save this for after the break. Stay tuned, everyone. We will be right back with Neil Slade here on SoulJourneysRadio.com. His website is neilslade.com. You can find out about all of his books, his music, and like I said, his website will literally keep you busy for months at a time. So it's not just one of those, well, like mine, that you can just look at and go away. Lots of fun stuff to do there and learn. But we left off, you know, I was asking you about pheromones and, you know, how some people are attracted to certain scents and odors and others not so much. And, you know, you brought up moldy cheese. I happen to like blue cheese. My neighbors hate blue cheese. So
cheese is good for you, but it's not good for me.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I guess I'm assuming our amygdalas are not one size fits all.
Exactly.
Where do the differences come in?
Well, that, you know, and this is one of the very important points of the Tickle Your Amygdala book, and why I spoke to 56 different people who did very different things, because everyone tickles their amygdala in a different way, in a very unique way that's unique to them. And as you pointed out, in the same way, no one size does not fit all. For example, you know, one person's body may require certain nutrients, where another person's body may require different nutrients. And so your amygdala is going to signal to you through various signals of positive or negative emotion, you know, how your own personal system is set up. And you have to, of course, familiarize yourself with you know, you have to tune in to what your amygdala is saying. It's tickle your amygdala, not tickle somebody else's amygdala.
Yeah. Of course, that could be fun, too. But
this is the, well, you can tickle someone else's amygdala if you know what you're doing, I would think. But what's important is that you know yourself, and that you start to tune in to these internal brain sensations rather than look outside for someone else to tell you what to do. And it doesn't mean to not listen to what other people may suggest, or not to be open to the suggestions of other people and other inputs, but ultimately, that decision of which way to go is going to be a decision that you make, and it's primarily going to be based upon your own internal brain feedback. That's ultimately the test. What is your own brain telling you?
Mm-hmm. Is it clicking forward or clicking backwards, so to speak, right?
Well, that's right. You know, and the real sign is, you know, whether you're getting positive emotional feedback or negative emotional feedback. It's kind of that intuitive sense that you can always, that you can rely on, you know, most of the time. Now, there is one thing to consider, and that is, are you considering the long-term effects of your behavior or thinking? Are you seeing the big picture, or are you just seeing what's 2 inches in front of your nose? So people can say, well, you know what? You know, drinking this gallon of beer, it feels really good, right? So I'm just going to keep drinking and drinking and drinking. And what happens is, if all you're tuned into is what's 2 inches in front of your nose, you might wake up with a reality hangover the next day. Or you may have some very serious negative rebound as a consequence of something that you didn't consider the big picture. Mm-hmm. And so the you want to be able to see what your amygdala is telling you at this moment, but you also have to consider, you have to ask yourself the question, what is my amygdala compass going to be telling me tomorrow or a week from now? Mm-hmm. And you've got two parts of your brain involved in looking at the amygdala. One is a part of the brain we'll just call the reptile brain. It's the primitive brain stem. It's the reactive part of the brain. It's the part of the brain that just is only in this moment. It doesn't really think. It doesn't calculate. It's just in the here and now, and that's all. Okay? Now, can you imagine your life if there were no tomorrow or yesterday? It sounds like it might, you know, we're all read that book, Be Here Now, right? And we know the importance of being in the moment. But what if you were only limited to seeing what was 2 inches in front of your nose? You'd be screwed. You can't, as a human being, you can't live that. We have a brain that also has a component called the frontal lobes. And that's that portion of your brain that if you spread your fingers out in your hand and you grab your forehead, everything that's under your fingers, the whole one-third bulk of your brain from the ears forward, that's called the frontal lobes. And the frontal lobes are magic. They're magical because what the frontal lobes can do is it can understand concepts of time. It can go into the future. It can see cause and effect. It can calculate the consequences of your action down the road. Your frontal lobes. I have an anagram for what the frontal lobes do. CICIL, C-I-C-I-L. Creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition, and logic. And I'll say that again. Creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition, and logic. So think about that. Create means to make something new, to take what you've got and you know, it's like taking flour and water and eggs and you put it all together and you create a birthday cake. Mm-hmm. You got to have frontal lobes to make a birthday cake. Your reptile brain can't do that. It can't add 2 + 2. This primitive reactive part of your brain just sees what's 2 inches. It can't even imagine a birthday cake, much less bake one. So creativity is an important concept of the frontal lobes. And imagination, okay? You can imagine what happens if you put this and with this and this. Einstein imagined what it would be like to ride on a beam of light. And from that, he got the theory of relativity. So if you can imagine something that's not literally 2 inches in front of your nose, right? You're seeing something in your mind's eye, in your third eye, that's not in front of your eyeballs. That's your imagination. That's a frontal lobe skill. Cooperation is another frontal lobe skill. You know, two heads are better than one. Ted heads are better than two. When you combine the wisdom and knowledge of one person with another person, you know, you've cubed what you know together. That's using your frontal lobes. So this idea of cooperation. Reptiles sit on a rock, you know, the old joke. I've said this a million times on the radio, but it's a good joke. The reptile brain computes the 4 F's of human behavior: feeding, fighting, fleeing, and reproduction. That's what reptile brain does.
Yeah, pretty much.
The 4 F's, right? Okay.
So the 4 F's.
All right. So that's what your reptile brain does. It's only in the, you know, it's just, you know, what feels good right at the moment. All right. But, you know, reptile lays eggs and splits. Kids, you're on your own. Whereas, you know, human beings and other advanced mammals with frontal lobes, they raise their and nurture their offspring. They say, you know, what can we do together? Let me help you. Let's work together. Okay. So that's cooperation. And then we have higher intuition. This is a frontal lobes, you know, now we start getting into the telepathy and into the precognition and clairvoyance and knowing something beyond what your senses are telling you. And we all have experienced that at some point in our lives. This is a higher frontal lobes type of skill. When you tune in to that matrix beyond you know, just the print that's in front of your nose. And then finally, logic. Logic is, you know, is the ability to see how this piece fits together with this piece and how you put a puzzle together. And all of these jigsaws, you put them together and there's this picture. So Cecil, creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition, and logic. Now, that part of your brain that computes Cecil can tell you what your amygdala compass is going to say tomorrow, right? So you're looking at that gallon of beer. Mm-hmm. The reptile brain just wants to chug it all down, all right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to feel real good. Yep, uh-huh. Okay, that's the reptile brain. It's like the little devil on the shoulder. You know, aim, go for it, man. Yeah, that's going to feel good. But the frontal lobe says, hold on, buddy. Let's just look at the big picture. If you drink that gallon of beer, you're going to be throwing up all night. I don't think it's such a good idea. Why don't you just have a glass or two? So that logic and that intuition starts to come into play. And that frontal lobes can say, you know what? You don't want an amygdala tickle just today. You want to tickle your amygdala tomorrow and all the next week too. So this is, we can read what that amygdala compass is with our frontal lobes, what that compass is going to be saying a month from now, depending on what we do today. So that amygdala compass is kind of it's a more primitive part of our brain that can't predict the future. So it has to be used with some intelligence and with a little jurisprudence, I think is the right word there. Sorry, I hope I didn't go on too long there.
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful description. Okay, so the amygdala kind of acts, well, they work together, but they all have their own functions as separate from the frontal lobes. Is that right?
That's
okay.
Right. The amygdala, you've got a left amygdala and a right amygdala, and they're both located about 1 inch inside each temple. And it's about the size of the tip of your thumb, and it's wrinkly, looks like a walnut. It comes from the Greek word meaning nut. And I don't mean Jerry Lewis. I mean, almond or amygdala. Amygdala means nut. So it looked, back then they knew it looked like a little nut. And it's about 1 inch inside each temple. And it's situated right in between the most primitive part of our brain, the reptile brain stem, and then these wonderful magical frontal lobes in the front. And it has inputs and outputs to all the different parts of the brain. So not only does it take in immediate sensory information, but it helps in the memorization and filing away. So, for example, if as an infant you burnt your fingers on the top of a stove because you, as a little kid, you said, oh, look, there's a pretty blue flower on top of the stove. I'm going to grab that. And you stick your fingers in this pretty blue flower and you get a burn. Well, your amygdala registers that pain and that negative emotion, and it helps to file it away. And you remember it. So anytime you see anything that looks like a pretty blue flower on a stove, it instantly, the amygdala clicks into action and says, oh, remember that? It hurt. Mm-hmm. And so you get a negative emotion from a cue. It might be a visual cue. It might be a smell. It might be something that you hear or something that you touch. The amygdala automatically retrieves that stored emotional memory. And that's how it can guide you around things that are bad for you or guide you towards things that are good for you so you don't have to keep learning that same lesson over and over again each time. Once you have that experience, the amygdala memorizes it, stores it, and then can retrieve it at any time. And so, again, there's another magical aspect of this amygdala compass. It can predict if something is going to be good, if something looks good, or if something looks bad.
Okay, so is it safe to say that the amygdala is pretty much the emotional storehouse of the brain?
Actually, it's not. The storage involves another part of the brain called the hippocampus. The amygdala is more like a hub. It's like a junction box. And so the inputs come into the amygdala, and then they're sent out to the other appropriate parts of the brain to engage either to retrieve memories or to store memories. So it's involved, but I'd say more as a hub. Now, the other really interesting thing about the amygdala is you can tickle it. and thus the title of the book. In other words, you don't have to be just a victim of what happens to happen. It's not a matter of you just kind of walking around and, oh, okay, and here my amygdala is getting tickled, so let's go there. Oh, and here my amygdala is getting bitten, right? So we'll stay away from it, that bites, and oh, that tickles, right? You can deliberately control your thoughts and behaviors so that you can guide yourself so that you get more tickles than bites.
Okay. Well, bites are good sometimes too, but yeah. I mean,
they're absolutely necessary. But let's say, let me give you an analogy. Let's say you want to go to the North Pole. All right. So you've got a compass in your hand, right? So you look at your compass and the needle, the needle is pointing north, but you notice that you're facing southeast. Well, you don't keep walking southeast. You turn your body to align with the magnetic north, and then you walk that way. Follow?
Absolutely. Very good description, Neil. But it is that time again, so please hold that right there. And we will continue right where we left off after this short break. Stay tuned, everyone. Neil Slade here on Soul Journeys Radio. I have a few questions here in the chat, Neil, but I'd love for you to please continue where you left off.
Okay. I'm not sure where I left off.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know what? You probably pretty much finished it up before the music came anyways. But
I was going north, right? So, okay. So the idea was, okay. So if your brain rewards you for thoughts and behaviors that enhance your survival, right? Nature wants you to survive, to continue the race and the experience, right? So rewards behaviors and thoughts that enhance your survival and quality of life. So rewards you, makes you feel good when you're going the right direction. And discourages you from going the wrong direction by making you feel bad, negative emotions or pain, okay? So we go through our daily life and, you know, we find, okay, we're going the right direction. I feel good. Oh, wait a minute. Now I feel bad. So I must be going the wrong direction. So I better change direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you hopefully find the new direction. You look at the compass and you say, oh, the needle's pointing this way and I'm facing this way. I need to change my direction so that I'm in alignment with my amygdala compass.
Mm-hmm.
You're following me?
Yes. Right?
We want to go in the direction that makes us feel good. But sometimes we find ourselves, we're facing the direction in which we feel bad. So we have a choice. We can keep going in that direction that makes us feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Which a lot of us do.
But that's, you know, it's just, it's not necessarily, it's you're going to be going down a dark alley. Or you can adjust your position so that you're in alignment with true north, right? Now, when you align yourself with true north, you feel good. Your amygdala is being tickled because the feedback that you're getting is saying, hey, yes, go this way. This is enhances your survival. Go that way. So your amygdala gets a tickle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. So if we just go through life like a ball on the top of a pinball machine, bouncing from one thing to the next and experiencing whatever just happens to happen, we're not using our brain. We've got these magical frontal lobes that can predict the future. Our frontal lobes can tell us what will happen tomorrow if we do something today. If we combine our brain power with our neighbor, we can learn from the mistakes of others, right? So to use your frontal lobes, you can keep yourself going in the right direction and thusly tickle your amygdala by using your intelligence instead of being like, that pinball ball bouncing from one bad thing to another. You can tickle your amygdala with your frontal lobes. It's magic.
Yeah, it does seem like it. And you and your wife are certainly wonderful examples of that. We've talked about in previous shows. And gosh, there's so many questions. But let me start here. What part of the brain controls dreaming? And can you tickle yourself into a lucid dream?
Ah, that's a very common question. What part of your brain controls dreaming? You know, I don't think I can answer that, and I don't know that anyone can. What we can observe is different types of brain activity while we're asleep.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there is a stage called rapid eye movement that tends to be associated with dreams, although some people are now saying that all dreaming does not occur during REM sleep, which is a big kind of turnaround from what has been the accepted line for many, many years. So I can't tell you what part of the brain is involved in dreaming. I will tell you that it is necessary to dream and to have all of these. You know, when you go to sleep at night, you go through various stages of sleep. And I'm not a sleep expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I do know that most people require 7 to 8 hours sleep a night. That's pretty much standard. There are some people who can get by with less very well, and some people who require more. But you need to go through all of these stages of sleep, because what's happening is during each stage, a different part of the brain is active and another part of the brain is resting. And it's kind of like you're getting a defragmentation of your brain during sleep.
Mm.
One part of your brain is repairing itself while another part of the brain is more active. And so each part of the brain comes, you know, goes through these various stages where it is apparently doing this, repair and rejuvenation. And if you don't go through all of those stages, you start to suffer, and you will suffer from missing out on sleep very quickly. From lack of sleep. Your other question, it escaped me, about sleep.
Can you tickle yourself into a lucid dream?
Oh, yes. That question is asked quite a lot. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not an expert in lucid dreaming, although I've played around with it some. And if someone is interested in lucid dreaming, there are a lot of books and web pages devoted to that. Although I will say this, it seems to be that people who get into this amygdala tickling phenomenon seem to tap into some very unusual dream states from time to time that happen spontaneously, that you will have those lucid types of dreams without necessarily intending to do so. And from my own experience, some of the dreams that I've had, and I would say directly as a result of amygdala tickling, are more real than reality. Often I've had these types of dreams where when I come out of them, it's like going into a dream. It's more real than real. And I've just called them these frontal lobes types of dreams, where you're conscious, where you're lucid, where they're more real than real, where there seems to be a very, very important lesson or message. And they just seem to come about spontaneously when you've been doing some serious amygdala tickling.
Yeah, and you know, I definitely have to say yes to that. And remembering the previous shows we've done together, Neil, we had comments and callers that actually talked about just that and how it helped them with their dreams, their visions, meditations, and creativity, which I think leads into the next question. They ask, they're wondering what frequency the amygdala vibrates at, and can you stimulate it by music?
Well, I talked about that in particular with Steven Snyder for the book. And Steven Snyder was Stevie Wonder's principal piano tech for 10 years. And he's been tickling his amygdala for a year. And he had stumbled upon my site. He had been a professional piano technician and so on. So he was very much into music, and obviously being Stevie Wonder's main guy, he used a tuning fork to tickle his amygdala specifically. And he would use one, I think it was really just a middle C tuning fork, which was at like 523 hertz. And that was his method. And he would just hold the tuning fork on various parts of his head. I believe on the forehead, right in front of the frontal lobes, and then above on the crown chakra, as it might be, and then on the temple where the amygdala would be. And he found that that physical vibration of the tuning fork would tickle his amygdala, as he had learned what his amygdala felt like when it was being tickled. So that was his technique. Other people don't need it. You know, most people don't use a tuning fork or use a tuning fork. Other people can just imagine a feather. You can just, you know, anyone listening right now, just imagine a multicolored feather inside your head and take the tip of it and, okay, locate your amygdala 1 inch side each temple, right? There's that little nut right between the back of your eyeball and at the top of your ear. If you were to go inside an inch, that's where your amygdala would be.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you've got a colored feather and you just touch the tip of that feather to the amygdala, and you go on the left side and go tickle, 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 tickle.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine you're tickling the right amygdala, tickle, tickle, tickle. And just that, by virtue of imagining a feather, you're tickling your amygdala. You're causing an increase of frontal lobes activity, and babe, you're doing it.
Oh, definitely. Now, we got just a couple seconds before we get cut off here, but so it's essential to tickle both sides, not just focus on one side?
Yeah, just like you walk with a left leg and you walk with a right leg, you know?
All right.
You hop on one leg, but for most of us, it's to our advantage to keep our body in balance, left and right side. So be it, the same with the amygdala.
Absolutely. All right, Neil, thanks so much. But it is that time. We will be back at the top of the second hour here with Neil Slades.
Fly me high through the starry skies, maybe to an astral plane. Cross the highway.
Welcome back. Top of the second hour here tonight on SoulJourneysRadio.com. Thanks so much for joining us here tonight with our special guest, Neil Slade. NeilSlade.com is the website. You can find out about his books, Tickle Your Amygdala, Frontal Lobe Supercharge, and all of the information we're talking about tonight. And, you know, let me ask you this. You know, I kind of alluded, you know, I asked you about the must we tickle both sides at the same time for it to be affected, because it kind of seems effective, excuse me. It kind of seems like we're in a semi-unbalanced culture, society, etc. Some people appear to be...
I am balanced.
Yeah. I'm trying to be nice.
Let me tell you something. I've been dealing... with the local government this past week.
Oh,
and
no.
When T.D. Lingo said to me, the human brain is 90% dormant, let me tell you, I've seen that in spades this week.
Uh-oh. That sounds like another show. Unless there's anything you want to share.
Show in this case. Actually, I have written a webpage about it just for jollies and grins. I built a webpage. It's neilslade.com/citybreakslaw.html. So if you're interested in local government.
Yeah, we probably most of us have some kind of experience with that. I'm going to post that link on the text chat, though, so we can read about it.
I'll send it to you. Well, you know what's astonishing to me as I work now, let me briefly tell you about it, because I think everyone can relate to this.
Oh, yeah.
I got a ticket for speeding, you know? Okay. And so I got stopped, and the cop says, well, I said, what's going on? He says, there were 7 signs warning to slow down because it's a construction zone. Didn't you see them? I said, no. So I went down the block, and where I entered into the street, there were no signs. One sign, 1 foot off the ground. So I looked up the federal regulations about posting signs, and it's very clear there's a minimum height of 7 feet that you've got to have for speed limit signs. It's very clear. It's plain English, right?
Yeah.
And there's a single sign at 7 feet at this location, and there wasn't and the one sign that was between me and the cop where I entered was sitting on the ground.
Mm.
So I brought up the regulations to these city officials, and I said, hey, you know what? You have to dismiss this ticket because you didn't follow the federal regulations for signposting. And to a man, so far, even though it's written in plain, unequivocal English, they can't see it.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it's like. And maybe a word of warning to people who kind of tap into these frontal lobes abilities, that when you start changing your perception because you're turning on your brain, you'll start to see so many people do not have their brain turned on at all. And it can't be quite.
You think? It almost seems, I mean, now that you're bringing up city government, and, you know, I mentioned to you a couple breaks ago, you know, what if all three parts aren't working together? Like, what if, you know, maybe there are people, I know, you know, I don't really want to get into some reptilian conspiracy or anything, but it does appear that many people are kind of locked there, you know, that they're, it's just not maybe really working well together with their frontal lobes.
So they're stuck in their reptile brain is what it is. They're stuck in this reactive brain. And, you know, my teacher, TDA Lingo, used to say the human brain is 90% dormant. And that's, you know, as far as I can tell, that's literally true. No one's living up to their potential, but it seems as though many people are further away from their potential.
And they all seem to have the same jobs. What's up with that?
Yeah, right. Yes, I know. Well, I don't want to insult anyone, you know.
No.
But you know, the thing is, we are culturally conditioned and supported to be clicked back into our reptile brain. Turn on the TV. Look at the newspaper. Listen to most radio. Gosh, look at the internet. It's all reptilian. Me, me, me. Shoot, kill, win by clobbering the other guy. Don't cooperate with your neighbor. Be fearful. You know, be afraid of the Iranians. Be afraid of terrorists. This it's a culture of fear and reptile brain behavior that we are surrounded with. And TD Lingo used to call the people who came to the brain lab pre-mutants. He said,
oh, wow.
People who have mutated, who have evolved either accidentally or for what reason to escape that cultural conformity by which people are afraid to be individuals and to think for themselves.
Mm. Definitely. Definitely. Okay, so
I'm sending you that link right now, so that should show up.
I already got it, and I posted it in the chat already.
Well, thank you very much. Well, maybe
So I saw the photos and everything. Okay, so maybe I exaggerated or under-exaggerated a little when I said we might be, some of us, semi-unbalanced. Okay, so we have established some are using a little bit more of their brains than others. And, you know, in regards to both sides, one of the guests on our show, Tobias Lars, brought up a really good point, you know, something to think about. And he pointed out the fact that most people are right-handed. I think he said 93% and 7% were left-handed. And I guess, you know, the right side of your brain controls the left side of your body and vice versa. And suggested a correlation between most of us being left brain and being right-handed and therefore maybe a little less creative than people like you and your wife.
You know, I've thought about that exact same thing, about the culture, and that I think this is true. I think Western society, and what I was comparing was Eastern cultures, such as, you know, Japan and China and that part of the world, with Western cultures. I wonder what, you know, I haven't looked into this. I wonder if there's a similar correlation in societies that tend to be more right-brained, okay, more visual, more intuitive, and if there is a corresponding preponderance of left-handedness. I mean, I'm wondering if I'm just asking that question for the first time at this moment, but that would be an interesting thing to look into. But yes, I do see that correlation between this sort of left brain culture that we are in. And I think we have tuned out our intuition. Yes. I have tuned out a lot of visual, you know, types of things. I haven't really come to a conclusion on that. I will acknowledge that most people get most of their information visually. I mean, people do less reading now probably than they used to historically, because we've got television, we've got iPads and computer screens, we've got movies, whereas people used to sit down in their living room and play piano sheet music. I mean, that's almost extinct now.
Yeah, it is.
Record player, or you don't put on the record player. Duh, what am I saying? You put on the MP3. You know,
you can't even find sheet music anymore, Neil. I've been looking for 4 years since I've lived here, and even drove to the city an hour away and go to these big music stores and trying to find sheet music. And I don't know, maybe it's an Ozark thing.
I have to say this, my friend Bobby, and I call him Bobby Spaghetti, and he's one of the characters, and he's one of the real characters in my book. He told me, just as kind of a side point here, the artist Beck just released his newest album, and it is only available as sheet music. He did not make a recording of his songs. If you want to hear his songs, you have to get the sheet music and play it.
So now that is really cool. He's going to challenge us and teach us something. How innovative.
Isn't that? I think that's a genius idea. And now we'll hear his new songs as played by everybody except him.
Yeah. Wow, that is really brilliant. Thanks for sharing that. I had no idea. Awesome. Okay, so I guess there are certain instances where the triune brain, or the three parts of the major parts of the brain, are not working together. Now, is there something that we can do about it? I know even myself, I feel like there's some kind of block on my creativity, and I search inward, like, oh, what's wrong with me? What am I doing to myself to cause this? And then I associate it, of course, with things that I know of, like, oh, maybe fear or shame or whatever it is. But is there something that we can do to unlock that creativity again?
Oh, yeah, sure. And I think what you're talking about is not when the brain, when different parts of the brain are not working together. I think really it really comes down to one problem, and that is frontal lobe inactivity.
We're
conditioned to be clicked backward into our reptile brain, and we have insufficient frontal lobes activity. We don't have enough creativity. We don't have enough imagination, cooperation, intuition, or logic. We feel bad, right? We feel stuck because our compass is pointing backwards towards our reptile brain. In other words, we're only functioning using a very limited part of our brain. We're only using the reactive part of our brains. So what we need to do is become familiar with these frontal lobe CECL processes. We have to think, and it's really very simple. All you have to do is kind of prime the engine, okay? Mm-hmm. So you prime the engine by tickling your amygdala. You imagine you have a feather. So you tickle your amygdala. What happened? Suddenly you turned on your imagination. And when you turned on your imagination by imagining that feather, it's like putting a little gasoline right at the carburetor. And then suddenly that engine will start up. Whereas a moment before, you were just feeling reptile brain pain. You were just But all it takes is just a little tiny step. Okay, I'm going to tickle my amygdala. And you know, on my site and in all my books, I give lots of examples of ways to tickle your amygdala. It doesn't have to be just to use a feather. You can listen to something funny. Turn on a funny television show. And the reason that works is because humor and laughter is computed in your frontal lobes. Frontal lobotomy, you won't understand funny jokes anymore. You may laugh uncontrollably, but you won't understand the latest joke, right?
Okay, so South Park does the body good, you're saying.
Yeah, I'd say within reason. Can't be too much South Park, right?
For sure.
All right, that's only using one part of your frontal lobe. You've got to use the frontal lobes. Has a lot of different skills. You have a left and a right hemisphere of your frontal lobes. Okay, so the right hemisphere of your frontal lobes would be things like music. It would be things like, I'm simplifying here because it's a little hard to say, well, this part of your brain does this and this alone. It's all interconnected. But the tendency is that the right hemisphere deals with spatial perception. It deals with music. It deals with visual. It deals with the big picture. It deals with seeing a global picture of things, okay? Whereas the left hemisphere is much more focused. It deals with little pictures, with a little piece of the pie, right? With, say, what's on your fork. The left hemisphere is concerned with what's on your fork, but the right hemisphere is looking at the whole pie. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Third, if you're a bird, your left hemisphere is pecking at the worm. But your right hemisphere is looking in the trees and in the environment to see if there are any predators around you. It's seeing the big picture, but the left hemisphere is looking at little focus picture. Left hemisphere is also language. You know, we've got Broca's area and Wernicke's area, which are language areas, which are on the left hemisphere of the brain. Math would be considered a left hemisphere. Language is left hemisphere. So you've got different skills in different sides of the brain that are emphasized by different sides of the brain. And you want to use both. You don't want to be limited to, you know, I say avoid the dead genius syndrome in the supercharge. You don't want to be, you know, Mozart was great at composing music, but he couldn't balance his checkbook.
Yeah.
He's penniless. Einstein was great with his left hemisphere, he could figure out math equations around circles around anyone, but he couldn't remember what street his house was on. He'd get lost walking home from the classroom. So you don't want to be like all left brain. You don't want to be all right brain. You want this balance. So that's why it's important to utilize logic, which is the L in CECL. But it's also important to utilize intuition. So CECL is telling you lots of things. Creativity, it says use your imagination. It says, you know, cooperate with other people. An interesting thing that I found out this year was a study that was done on criminals in prison. And they did brain scans of two classes of criminals. One were psychopathic criminals. These were criminals who did something horrendous, and they had absolutely no remorse, and if you let them out, they do it again.
Mm-hmm.
These were psychopaths.
Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. Hold that right there, Neil. It's that time, but I definitely want to hear more about that when we return after this short break. Stay tuned, everyone. We're going to be right back with Neil Slade here on SoulJourneysRadio.com. Right, welcome back. Thanks again for joining us here tonight with Neil Slade here on SoulJourneysRadio.com. We're talking about Tickling Your Amygdala. That's one of the titles of his books. You can find at his website, NeilSlade.com. And we left off, Neil, right before break, you were telling us about the study with the psychopathic criminals.
Oh, yes. Let me make one quick clarification. You can get to my website by going to BrainRadar.com. That, everyone knows how to spell Brain Radar. Some people might mess up the spelling of Neil. It's like, is it N-E-I-L or A-L? Or so,
okay, I'll change that.
Take you where you want to go. Okay, so they studied these two different types of criminals. And I'll repeat, the psychopaths who had no remorse, they didn't care. And if you let them out, they do it all over again, all right? The other class of criminals that they studied were, they said, yeah, you know what, I blew it. I did something wrong, and, you know, I'm sorry, and I recognize. So they did brain scans, and what they found was this. The typical criminal who could understand the difference between right and wrong and the effect that he had on another person, that he had empathy for his victims, had a normal connection between his amygdala and his medial prefrontal cortex, which is a part of the inside of the frontal lobes. The psychopath had a damaged connection between his amygdala and his frontal lobes. Isn't that interesting? So it's your frontal lobes, and they know the spot. It's right in the fold in between your left and right hemispheres that allows you to empathize with another person, to put yourself in someone else's shoes. So when you talk about tickling your amygdala and doing it in the most powerful way and getting the best feelings out of your brain, you got to use all of your frontal lobes, not just, you can't just be a guy who's doing nothing but writing music all the time, because you'll be out on the street broke. You'll be penniless. You've got to have a balanced brain in the same way that as you walk down the street, you step forward with your left leg, and then you step forward with your right leg. It's left, right. It's a balance. Now, something very interesting that I was taught by one of the brain researchers that's in the Tickle Your Amygdala, and I have to apologize. I have a little trouble saying her name. Her name is Mary Lou Oosthuizen, and it's a kind of a Dutch South African name. Mary Louise Oosthuizen, who's a brain education researcher in Mexico. She told me that we were talking about sleep earlier, that the brain actually goes through natural cycles of more activity in one hemisphere, and then it cycles over to more activity in the other hemisphere. So you go, your brain actually cycles through left brain, right brain, left brain, right brain predominance. And it's about between 90 and 120-minute cycles. And you can actually kind of get a feel and recognize if you're in a left brain cycle.
Oh, so that's why certain times of the day I feel more creative than others?
Yes. Sometimes it might be better suited for reading. Other times might be set, you know, let's say you're in a right brain mode. That would be a better time for painting a picture or listening to music or gardening. Then if you're in a left brain mode, that might be a better time for studying or reading or arguing with the local officials that are dealing with traffic violations.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense, because I do, there's certain times of, I don't know. What I've noticed anyways is like afternoon or nighttime where it's really quiet, I feel more creative, more able to write, whereas other times of the day, there's no way you can make me do any of that. And, you know, I just like feel it flow or I don't. And wow, that's really interesting to understand the cycles.
There may be other cycles that, you know, that are superimposed upon that left brain, right brain cycle.
So yeah, I bet.
Cycle, maybe there's a, you know, there are other cycles, you know, above that as well that also contribute to those feelings that, you know, this is a good time to do something or this is a bad time. But, you know, but it all basically comes down to is what's your amygdala telling you? What is, you know, you're basing your, you have to base your decisions on something. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can use the logical part of your brain. You can use the imagine, you know, you use all of these parts of your brain, but ultimately it comes to, you know, what is that compass telling you? What's your compass telling you right now is the best thing to do? And the thing to consider too is, you know, sometimes you do something that may be a little bit uncomfortable at the moment, but it pays off in the long run. You know, nobody likes to go to the doctor to get an injection, for example. You know, some people are going to say, no, nobody should be getting
never.
Just as an example, but, yes. you know, but you might go to the doctor and get a shot, and then when you go to Africa, you won't get malaria. So that malaria shot hurt before you got on the plane, but, you know, you're pretty glad you did it. But it took your frontal lobes. You had to look at what your amygdala compass was going to tell you, not with your only-in-the-moment reptile brain. You had to look at what the amygdala compass was going to say with your frontal lobes. So you see how that all kind of ties together there?
Yeah, I definitely do. Okay, so let me ask you this, getting back to the whole left-right thing. If you, you know, as far as inspiring creativity or maybe awakening dormant activity and creativity, if we choose to tickle our amygdala, would it be appropriate to focus maybe on the right brain?
Well, again, I think whatever it is that you do, it's important to look at things from both sides, from the left brain perspective and from the right brain perspective, from the visual and from the language, from the auditory and from the tactile, from the focus and from the big picture. You're going to get in trouble if you only look at one side of the coin, no matter what you do.
Oh, and for sure. But for example, if we've come to the inclusion, if we've really assessed our life and woke up one day and decided, wow, I'm really left brain and I want to do something about it.
Right,
maybe, you know, say you want to tickle your amygdala, you set aside 10 minutes a day to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe do 7 minutes right, 3 minutes left until we find that balance.
Well, I have to caution you that it doesn't even take that much time. People often ask me, how long does it take to tickle your amygdala? And I say, about 1 second. Or in your head, and it's tickling your amygdala. Boom. How long does that take? That's, you know, you can do it while you're standing in line at the bank, while you're in a traffic jam, while you are taking a bath, while you're, you know, taking your dog for any time, any place. It's not something like where you have to sit down for 20 minutes in a lotus position and tickle your amygdala. That's not what I'm talking. I mean, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no problem with really, you know, if you want to sit down for 15, 20 minutes or an hour and really concentrate on that part of your brain, more power to you. But it doesn't necessarily require that. You can just imagine a feather and go tickle, tickle, and boom, you put a little gasoline right at the carburetor and you're off and running. You know, you may be in line at the supermarket and somebody cuts in front of you. Right? Because here's a good example. You're at the this happened to me today. I was at the supermarket and I was getting ready to check out and there was a basket full of groceries and nobody around. I thought, oh, well, I should just go right ahead. But I tickled my amygdala and I says, okay, just cut him some slack for 10 seconds. And 10 seconds, the lady comes in, and boom, she went through. And so there was a smooth transaction between me and the lady who was irresponsible with her shopping cart, you know. it's reptilian battle with this woman. And I cut her some slack. And so that was it. It was, you know, we both happily went on our way. But for me, that was a 1 second tickle. And it might have made all the difference in the world. You know, there are many stories when you talk to people who just go nuts. People who just kind of lose it, and people, you know, maybe they'll murder somebody, and it was just one word. It was just the straw that broke the camel's back. Well, maybe if someone had just tickled their amygdala for 2 seconds, it might have saved somebody's life. Mm. Okay? So it's not, you know, you can spend as much time as you want doing it, but it's just a moment that you just pause and say, I'm going to tickle instead of biting somebody's head off. Or I'm going to tickle my amygdala and use my reflective brain instead of going ballistic with my reptile brain, you know?
Yeah. That's really good to know. I was just having a conversation with someone just last night who, is kind of that, just pulls the trigger really quickly, hears something or sees something. And, you know, I was like, well, what can we do to make it so, you know, you don't really go overboard and get in trouble, but there's some new advice. We'll just teach him to tickle his amygdala. Yeah. I like that.
You asked, you know, what can you do if you want to get more creative? And I think that was one of your questions.
Yes.
And, you know, again, I really would refer people to go to brainradar.com. There's like 2,000 pages on that site, and there's all kinds of suggestions. And every person is going to tickle their amygdala differently. You know, like we said at the beginning of the show, everyone's unique. You're going to find something that works for you, and, you know, you'll be open to the suggestions. And, you know, like in my, in the Tickle Your Amygdala book, I talked to 56 people that are all vastly different. And out of each person that I interviewed for the book, I said, okay, how is this, I talked with Terry Jones. I talked with one of the founding members of Monty Python. I interviewed him for this book. And so after I talked to him, I said, well, how is Terry Jones tickling his amygdala? Okay. So I have an exercise derived from my talk with Terry Jones. And I talked with Josh Blue, who is a winner of Last Comic Standing. And he is the comedian with the cerebral palsy. Very funny guy and a neighbor of mine. And so we talked, and I said, oh, okay, here's the tickling exercises from Josh Blue. And then I talked with a neurosurgeon at the University of Colorado Medical Center. And I said, how's he tickling his amygdala, and how can somebody else tickle in the way? So in the book, there's like one different way to tickle your amygdala for every day of the year. I mean, every week of the year. There's 52 ways in the book. You know, some of them would be like the nose. Make yourself a bowl of popcorn and smell it. So you'd be familiar with how your amygdala feels. Another exercise might be the one from Josh Blue, which is make yourself laugh to turn on your frontal lobes. Another exercise might be to sit and do a more focused type of meditation. Another one might be take your dog for a walk to get oxygen into your brain and to get out into a new environment. So there's many, many different ways to tickle. You'll do it one way, one time. You'll do it another way, another time. But you'll understand that fundamental principle of what it means to look at your amygdala compass and use it for guidance, and also to, you know, allow yourself to align yourself with that direction in which your amygdala compass is telling you, go this way.
Okay.
Ta-da.
I've heard that before. A lot of it. You know what? Let me ask you this. Why is it that we are so conditioned to not trust our intuition? Why do we, when we hear that voice or whatever say, don't go this way, go here, we refuse and do the opposite?
Well, I think, again, it's a cultural conditioning that we are taught by you know, for lack of a better description, people in power were taught to obey me. Don't listen to yourself. Don't be an individual. Be a lemming. Follow. Yeah. Do what everybody else is doing. You know, go do your job, pay your taxes, drive on the right side of the road. Here's the parameters in which we want you to behave, and don't go outside those limitations, because if you do that, oh, that's dangerous. Okay, people, you know, we're taught to be obedient and not to be individuals. So when you start listening to your intuition, you're listening to this inner voice which says, I am a unique individual in a unique situation, and I need to respond accordingly, and it may not be according to somebody else's rules, right? And that takes, I mean, that's a pretty big leap for a lot of people to make.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I know sometimes, at least in my case, is, well, it's just curiosity. Well, I know I shouldn't do this, but I want to see what happens anyways. But hey, at least sometimes I learn from my mistakes. But it's that time. We're going to be right back, everyone. Stay tuned. Neil Slate here on SoulJourneysRadio.com. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us here tonight. Last segment with Neil Slate of BrainRadar.com. And, you know, I got to apologize. We kind of did things a little bit backwards tonight. I guess I was just so excited to get into the topic, and we kind of went with the flow, and we ended up in the meat and didn't really talk about your background, Neil, or how you learned all this information, how you came across it. So if you would, please share that with us.
I was a kind of, how should I say, I was a struggling musician at the age of 28, and I had my degree in music education. And I had just suffered through teaching in the public schools for a year. And I was like, oh, my God, is this what my life is going to be like for now? And so I was watching TV late one night, and there was a documentary on our local PBS station, and it featured this crazy-looking guy who ran a brain and behavior modification laboratory in the wilderness at 10,000 feet in the mountains of Colorado, 40 miles west of where I lived. And everyone looked like they were having a great time. And they were up in the woods in the log cabins, and they were singing songs, and they were studying the human brain. It was just crazy. So I thought, I need to get in touch with this guy. Because at the end of the show, they had an interview with this long-haired, bearded guy. And he says, well, just write to me at the Dorman Brain Research Laboratory, and I'll send you instructions, and you can come to our brain camp. So I wrote to him, and I ended up staying 11 years. And Lingo had run this. It was a brain study camp where people learned about the human brain. They learned self-therapy. They learned how to treat their own neurosis. They learned how to be creative. All these wonderful things. You'd go up, you'd camp out for 6 weeks, and you could stay in touch with the camp throughout the year. And I became Lingo's right-hand man for about 11 years. I wrote my first book on brain and behavior called The Frontal Lobe Supercharge in 1989 while he was still alive. He died in 1993, and I took over the work that he was doing in 93 and just carried on in his education. And I've continued my own, you know, informal line of research, and much more in the educational aspect of brain and behavior publication and education. Again, as I mentioned, I was an educator. So I counted up. I've taught about 30,000 music and art lessons in my life, 30,000 half-hour lessons. So I've had an awful lot of practice one-on-one with people, figuring out what makes them tick, what makes them learn fast, what makes them enjoy what they're doing, you know, in addition to all of the brain and behavior education that I've been, you know, I've been able to put it to very practical application. And so at this point, I've written, I think, now 8 books. The Secret of the Dormant Brain Lab is about my experience at the brain lab. The Tickle Your Amygdala is my favorite book right now. It's the one, I think it's my best book, and it's the one that just won that I just published this past spring. And most of my books you can get all my books at brainradar.com. And I send them out with free priority, and this is a little commercial, I guess. But you can also get Kindle versions of my books. Some of them are available as PDF. You can get all my stuff on Amazon. So brainradar.com, go there first. And if you want to go to Amazon, go to Amazon.
Now, do you have any, like, bundle deals? What if somebody wants all of your books?
Yes, I have a thing called the complete Brain Book and Music Set, which is everything I publish. It's relatively cheap. It's just over $100. And so you get like 40 hours of audio, and then you get 5 printed books. And then I also have made a feature film about the brain called The Amazing Brain Adventure. And that's a 5-hour DVD. So that's a complete package. And there's all of that for
$100.
Well, there's even a better deal, and this is called the Whole Universe Brain DVD. And it's $50, and it's everything on one DVD in electronic form. So everything's been converted to MP3 files, so you can put them on your portable device. You can listen to it on your computer. So it's everything on one DVD. And so for $50, that'll keep you busy for about 3 months of solid.
Okay. Wow.
So. Enjoyment. So just go to brainradar.com, and everything is explained in excruciating detail. Mm-hmm. And you can always, if anyone has a question, I answer all my emails the same day I get them. People are shocked when they say, "I can't believe you actually answered my email." But I do. I'm on my computer all the time talking with people.
So. Okay. Now, I found the first package you mentioned, the Whole Universe DVD set. What was the second package you mentioned?
Well, you know, there's a link. If you go to brainradar.com, you'll see a picture of my two dogs. Do you see Urfi and Chloe there?
Let's go to the home page. Okay, I was getting lost in other links.
Oh, okay. It's like,
yes, I see them. They're so cute.
So there's Urfi and Chloe, and if you click on Urfi and Chloe, the Brain Book and Music Store, then you'll see there's three boxes there. So that tells you can get stuff online, instant online. You can get the DVD. There's printed books there. There's brain music and audio. There's the movie. And there you see at the top of the page all the printed books. So just click on Urfi and Chloe, and you can get everything that I offer from that link. And again, if you have any questions, just, email me. And my email is at the bottom of the main page there,
awesome.
ns@neilslade.com.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
I make things cheap. I want everyone to know about tickling their amygdala. And, even if you'd never buy anything from me, there's tons and tons of stuff on the website, and you can learn all about tickling your amygdala from brainradar.com.
Okay, excellent. All right. I got that. Go to brainradar.com and then click on the cute little doggies. And those are amazing packages. How do you get all of the books on one DVD, though?
Well, you can. The books are converted into PDF files. So PDF
okay.
files. DVD's actually got quite a bit of information. You can put 4 gigabytes on a DVD. And so I've compressed the film. So you've got a feature film on there plus all the audio stuff. But to my astonishment, I can get it all on four gigabytes, and it's a huge amount of material. So working for people.
Like, one thing we didn't talk about tonight, and I wanted to bring it up when the person asked the question, if you can stimulate it by music, et cetera.
Yes.
And, yes, of course, and that's yes. And that's your expertise. In fact, you produce music that I think has made tickling my amygdala so much easier. So do any of these packages include any of your music?
Oh, yes, many of them do. The Whole Brain Universe set has got 10 of my brain music albums on it. The complete set has 20 CDs.
Oh, wow.
Oh, if you just, and you can buy any of the brain music CDs independent of each other, although, it's a much better deal if you get like a package for $50 or, or there's some sets that have 10 CDs and 3 books. And, I try to put it together in any possible combination because I know people are different. So somebody might want to read the Have Fun Anti-Rules book, and they might like piano music.
So that is so funny, Neil. Right when you said that, the Have Fun, I literally just posted the same link in the text chat.
Oh, fantastic.
Right when you said that. Oh, that's amazing.
One quick thing, they'll take 30 seconds to say, you know, there's a lot of self-help gurus out there that promise this and promise that, and I never want to be put in the category self-help guru. What I'm talking about in terms of tickling the amygdala is a real thing that happens inside the human brain. And from 2009 to from 95 to 2009, they did research at Harvard University, Sarah Lazar, Dr. Herbert Benson. They took brain scans of people tickling their amygdala and lighting up their frontal lobes. And they did it not with drugs. They didn't do it with electrodes. They did it with sheer thought. So you can indeed, with just the sheer power of your own thought, turn on more of your brain and do this physical, real thing, which is turning on your amygdala and tickling your amygdala. So it's not pretend. It's not hoo-ha. We're talking about that is something that's physical and very real.
It definitely is very real, and I know from personal experience. Also, in regards to your music, any sneak previews anywhere, YouTube or your site or anything?
Yes, you go to YouTube/Neil Slade, one word. There's tons of stuff on YouTube under my name, too. So music videos and all kinds of videos, too.
All right. Once again, that's youtube.com/Neil Slade. That's one word, NEILSLADE, Neil. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Rachel, thank you very, very much.
Yes, thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed you and look forward to having you back in the future. I want to thank you all for joining us here tonight. Abundant blessings and love to all. We will see you tomorrow night with Tobias Lars here on SoulJourneysRadio.com.